Okay, so this talk is based on past work with Anton Kapustin and with my student here, Laksa Bardavai, and on some ongoing work with Theo Johnson-Freid, which is a postdoc here. As the title suggests, I've been quite curious about the precise relationship between gap phases of matter and topological field theory. Now, clearly there is a very strong relationship between these two notions. So it has been a very amazing discovery. But they are two quite separate notions. You know, they're defined in very different ways. And the fact that they match so nicely is, in a sense, a little bit mysterious. And the dictionary somehow between notions on the two sides can be quite subtle. Now, one of the reasons I like this subject so much is precisely because it receives insights from four very different communities. Topological field theories were roughly born in high energy physics and then have been developing beautifully in mathematics. The application of topological field theories to gap phases of matter came out of a combination of condensed matter physics and quantum information theory. And each of the four communities have their own notion of what we're talking about and what axioms, what assumptions are reasonable. The fact that they match so well is quite magical. Now, I can perhaps just mention from briefly some obvious examples of situations where these two sort of things are matching very well. These are pretty much the subjects of this workshop, but clearly, anions in 2+1 dimensional gap systems have been encoded in modular tensor categories. Which also are related to 2+1 dimensional topological field theories. I probably should just say the 3-dimensional, but let me leave it at that. This is a very nice and clean example. So if you have a gap system and you study its anions, you can associate to it a topological field theory. Now the connection is sort of indirect, if you want, because if you give me a gap system, it's definitely not the most natural thing to put it on a Riemann surface of some complicated genus, right? The way we think about topological field theories is not obviously aligned with the way we think about gap systems in 2+1 dimension. You need to do some work to relate the two, and the work is essentially passing through this algebraic data. Another beautiful example is the study of SPT phases, symmetric protective phases, for some internal symmetry. These phases, in the bosonic case, have been studied or tentatively classified in terms of group cohomology. Which also is used to build Dagrav-Witten topological actions. I mean, actions for topological gauge theories. Now, already here, if you start going up in dimension, you can find some interesting questions. Because when you start asking yourself what are the topological field theories, topological actions for gauge theories that you can write in generic dimension, you start encountering things like cobordism groups. it's not completely obvious that all of those pieces of data can be converted into a lattice system and identified with some actual gap phase of matter. So the dictionary is not completely obvious. But in low dimension, it's fine. If you look at fermionic systems, things become even more fun. You can look at fermionic SPT phases, right? And then start building models of fermionic SPT phases. Go and when started with some beautiful construction of supercohomology. And then, based on various considerations, people extended it farther. Adding extra layers of complexity involving Majorana fermions. And then you can try to figure out which topological field theories might be associated to this sort of data. And you find that somehow the match seems to work. You think about something like spin topological field theories. I mean, you want to look at something like fermionic topological field theories. But somehow the spin statistics theorem seems to make an appearance. Somehow the topological field theory associated to this fermionic SPT phase seem to be topological field theory if you assign stuff to manifolds with spin structure. Now, as a high energy physicist, initially this seemed quite natural to me. I have ingrained the notion that fermions are spinners. You know, unitary relativistic quantum field theory, fermions are spinners. But why would such a relation make an appearance in condensed matter physics? If I just have a lattice system with some fermions on it, why should I ever have to worry about the spin structure? So the appearance of a spin statistic theorem, I find it very, very, very interesting and very confusing. So it seems to be a point where different perspectives might start to diverge. There is no clear way the high energy physics perspective should really be precisely corresponding to the condensed matter physics perspective. So, in general, right, the sort of questions one might ask when you look at this correspondence, right, is which gap phases of matter can be associated to topological and quantum field theories? What are the topological gap phases? And once you find them, you can ask, okay, I have a map to topological field theories. Is this map really injective? Is it surjective? Right? Is it really true that if two gap systems have the same topological field theory data, they are the same phase? Or can I realize every topological field theory on a lattice? I find these questions rather interesting. And these questions become more interesting if you add structure, right? So if you look at gap phases which are fermionic or, if you look at fermionic phases, if you look at phases with symmetry, internal symmetries, lattice symmetries, time reversal symmetry, if you ask questions about unitary theories versus non-unitary theories, which might seem strange in physics, but after all, we might be talking about statistical mechanics systems in which unitarity just means reflection positivity and is not necessarily something you want. So all of these constraints, all of these symmetries and properties, what do they convert, what do they map to? How do you need to enrich the notion of topological quantum field theory in order to account for all of these pieces of information? Now, it's kind of fun to compare the different ways gap systems or topological field theories are defined. When I talk about gap systems, let me just, to be concrete, talk about lattice, local lattice systems. So imagine you have some d-dimensional lattice. You have some local degrees of freedom with operators at different lattice size commuting with each other. And you have some Hamiltonian, which is a sum of local terms. So already there are two different definitions of phase of matter. I've seen phases of matter defined as gap systems which can be connected, gap Hamiltonians which can be connected continuously without ruining the gap. So the definition one would be sort of the space of the connected components in the space of gap Hamiltonians. Okay, this is a reasonable definition. It seems nice, very hard to work with, I guess. But then reading papers in condensed matter physics and I started encountering another definition which I found very mind-boggling. Which is somehow wave function, the idea that gap systems can be characterized just by the local properties of a wave function. The different phases correspond to different wave functions which cannot be related by local unitary transformations. This seems to be a completely amazing idea to me. Hard to wrap my head around it, but it's a very beautiful definition and it's very clean definition.
Is the idea not just that if you have two different gap systems with different ground states, but they're nevertheless in the same phase according to definition one?
Mm-hmm.
Right, then you would be able to change the Hamiltonian slowly, adiabatically, to go from one to the other. This would imply and implement a local unitary transformation.
Yes. I can see that this encodes some property here. It's perhaps a bit less obvious how to go the other way.
Yeah.
Because here there is no reference whatsoever to a Hamiltonian. I'm sure that you can establish a relation between the two, but there are different definitions. So another thing I like about this set of problems is that they're very physical, but also very precise. So you can imagine really proving sharp theorems about things you do. And of course, mathematicians studying topological quantum field theories have been proving lots of beautiful theorems. We heard some today. We'll hear more during the rest of the week. What I would really like to would be to able to take each of these theorems and say, okay, this is a true statement about some physical theories, which I can trust completely. This is a theorem about physical theories. And my ability to do that, of course, is conditioned by how closely the assumptions of these mathematical theorems are aligned to the physical problems at hand. So at the moment, it's not obvious to me that these mathematical theorems can be just taken and brought directly to physics, but it seems to be doable. it seems conceivable to me that one should be able to formalize these problems to a degree which you, allows you to prove theorems. To say within certain assumptions, I don't know, each system is each phase from this point of view can be associated to a, in two plus one dimensions, can be associated to a modular tensor category. Now, I'm not saying I can do that, but I'm just saying this is one type of problem that I would like to be able to at least partly address. Maybe I'll say it a bit more later. But just to continue the comparison between condensed matter and quantum information theory and the sort of background I come from in topological field theory, let me just describe what the topological field theory is in high energy physics. I think it's fair to say that the topological quantum field theory in high energy physics is an effective low energy description of a gapped relativistic quantum field theory. So the example you can have in the back of your mind is I take Chern-Simons theory, put in a Jan-Mills action plus Chern-Simons action. This is a perfectly well-defined, supernormalizable, effective quantum field theory. Has a gap. And at low energy, you find the calculations you can do are contained into the modular tensor category associated to the Chern-Simons theory. Now, you can ask why. So in this setup, the relationship between gapped and topological is actually quite transparent. And if you're already sitting in quantum field theory, because almost by definition, the effective low energy description of a gapped quantum field theory has the property that local operators in the UV become all multiple of the identities in the, of the identity operator in the IR. In the UV, my quantum field theory comes equipped with a stress tensor, which controls the coupling to the metric. And in the IR, the stress tensor must become some number, some C number, a multiple of the identity, which is a function of some whatever background fields you have coupled your system to. Now, in favorable circumstances, you can add to your action a counterterm, which is just a function of these background fields, with the property that the variation of the counterterm with respect to the metric is this effective low energy stress tensor. When that is the case, you can add this to the action, and this becomes zero. The stress tensor is zero, and the theory is on the nose topological. It cannot depend on the coupling to the metric. This is usually not possible, though. For example, when you study Chern-Simons theory, this is not the case. For Chern-Simons theory, this is something called the Cotton tensor. It's not the variation of a local term. What you can do is to sort of make this background action depend on, this counterterm depend on something else like a framing. And then you can at least get a frame topological field theory out of your quantum field theory. Anyway, so this is a beautiful way of building topological field theories. For example, via Chern-Simons theory, we can build a lot of topological field theory, and you can do similar things in other dimensions. It's a terrible way to think abstractly about topological field theory, because relativistic quantum field theories are a very complicated beast we don't quite understand well. I don't have no idea what is the space of all possible relativistic quantum field theories. It's much harder than the problem of understanding generic topological field theories. Now, it also not terribly useful if you want to figure out if a certain gap system is described by a topological field theory and by which topological field theory. I mean, I can imagine that in very favorable circumstances, your gap system a lattice system might admit an effective description in terms of some relativistic quantum field theory. And then when you flow all the way to the infrared, you find the topological field theory. But I would guess this is very unlikely to happen. Most typically, I can imagine that the lattice system and the quantum field theory might flow to the same effective low energy theory. So when you say that the quantum Hall system is described by Chern-Simons theory, I don't imagine that there is a relativistic Chern-Simons theory going on at some intermediate energy scale, but just that the properties of the anions of this quantum Hall system are the same as the anions of this or some other quantum field theory. But also, this sort of perspective puts a big bias, because here I'm starting with something relativistic. I can also imagine that there are some lattice theories which go to some topological quantum field theories for which there is no relativistic quantum field theory ancestor. So because we have this big zoo of topological quantum field theory associated to Chern-Simons theory, to quantum field theories, we might be just overlooking other topological phases which are not intrinsically not relativistic, which have some intrinsic anisotropy. And of course, as I was mentioning for the fermionic systems, this sort of questions, this sort of problems become very sharp in the fermionic case, because in the fermionic case, these quantum field theories require space-time to be a spin manifold. So whenever I talk about fermionic quantum field theories and gapped phases obtained from fermionic quantum field theories, they will always be spin topological quantum field theories. A priori, it's not clear that fermionic lattice theory would have to land there. Now, in the work I did with Anton Kapustin and subsequent work by Kapustin and other collaborators, we found some reason to think that fermionic lattice systems in general might be related to spin topological field theories. For example, you can sort of generalize the notion of bosonization, give general higher dimensional versions of bosonization at the price of where you take a bosonic system and you can try to simulate a fermionic system inside of it at the price of introducing some coupling to spin structure on your space-time. But I'm not quite sure that it's enough to say there is a one-to-one map. For example, in 2+1 dimensions, you can take the toric code, take the fermionic anion of your toric code and trying to use them to simulate a fermionic system. Sort of build a lattice Hamiltonian on top of your toric code Hamiltonian, which simulates a fermionic system. And you can do it as long as you also add some coupling to this spin structure. I will discuss that a little bit later. But anyway, so let me just discuss the mathematical perspective on topological field theories. Originally, at least, the way mathematicians took hold of topological field theory, as far as I understand, is thinking about the sort of data that the topological field theory attaches to manifolds. So the topological perspective on topological field theory. So the topological field theories are kind of born as a functor from Bordisms, from a category of Bordisms, somewhere, say to vector spaces. Maybe super vector spaces for fermionic systems. Meaning that if you have some manifold, some space-time manifold, you expect to be able to attach to it a number, which is the partition function. if you have a d-dimensional manifold, you are expected to be able to attach to it a vector space, a Hilbert space, actually, which is the space of states on that space manifold. If you have a Bordesian between two spaces, you're supposed to get from it a map from this vector space associated to this manifold to the vector space associated to that manifold, and so on and so forth. And this sort of data is supposed to be independent of topological manipulations in order to define a topological field theory. But because the topology of manifolds is very complicated as you go up in dimension, it becomes harder and harder to figure out which algebraic structure is hidden inside these axioms. Now, something that happened afterwards is that people learned that they could trade this topological complexity for a different type of algebraic complexity by looking at extended topological field theories. That means that you sort of keep going at lower dimension. So here to a d-dimensional manifold, we associated an object in the category of vector spaces. In an extended topological field theory to a d minus one dimensional manifold, you would associate a category which is sort of an object in some two category. And then you would keep going all the way down to a point to which you would associate some D category. An object in some D plus one dimensional category. And then a beautiful theorem of topology, the Cobordism hypothesis, guarantees that out of all this hierarchical structure, only the last level matters. So if you have an object in some category which satisfies certain axioms, then everything else can be reconstructed uniquely. I find this a very beautiful result physically, in the sense that when I think about a quantum field theory, I don't think about defining it by giving answers for every manifold, right? I have a Lagrangian, I have some sort of local data from which I expect to be able to compute things on general manifolds. So this seems to be very natural stuff physically to think about topological quantum field theory. And also one could imagine sort of generalizing this perspective and saying, okay, maybe I can find some nice and D plus one dimensional category such that from a gap system, I can find an object. One thing that the Cobordism hypothesis does not give you is to tell you which category you should work with. So there is a problem of finding the correct target category. You know, the category which describes the specific type of topological field theories you want to talk about. So what I would like to see would be to see a definition of a target category which I know for sure controls gap systems, right? Topological gap systems, together with a recipe, at least in principle, that given a gap system or a gap phase governed by those axioms, produces an object in that category. This will allow you to, you know, prove actual theorems about gap systems. And although this might seem very ambitious, it might be possible to at least do it for some subsets or systems. So this is one of the things I'm trying to do now, to find a specific collection of gap systems and a specific collection of topological field theories, a specific target category, which comes with a certificate. You know, this thing can be put on a lattice, and things that are the same as in the category are clearly phases which can be connected to each other. Now, it's a bit too preliminary to discuss it now, but I can perhaps say something about a subset of this problem which concerns invertible phases. So invertible phases are phases of matter for which you can find another phase, such that their product is a trivial phase. They are expected to be related to invertible topological field theories, which are topological field theories which have an inverse. And there have been, as you can see, right, there are all sort of cohomology-based attempts of classifying invertible theories with symmetry, with various symmetry. And I would like to understand how these attempts relate to classifications of invertible topological field theory. And another thing I would like to make sure I understand better is how much can I trust that relativistic symmetry will emerge at low energy in a gap system? I would like to understand it. You know, in the topological description, in the mathematical description of topological field theory, relativistic symmetry is actually not assumed. Mathematicians typically study to start with framed topological field theories, which are topological field theories which require you at each point of your manifold to specify a set of directions continuously. And then there are extra conditions you need to put on in order to for this framed topological field theory to be actually not framed, or to be spin, or things like that. So again, I would like to understand a bit better, under which conditions a gap system can give you a framed topological field theory or a topological field theory, and so on. Okay. Now, after this somewhat rambling review of things I would like to see, let me just describe some of the things we did in the past and we are doing now. So let me just focus, as I said, on SPT phases. So SPT phases are phases of matter which have a symmetry, an internal symmetry, which is acting on each lattice site, and which will be trivial if you ignore the symmetry. Where you want them to be short range entangled. I guess you can discuss if trivial means that it's really the trivial phase, or trivial might mean that it's a phase with short-range entanglement, an invertible phase, say. So perhaps another way to think about them is invertible phases with group symmetry, with an internal symmetry. Now, in the bosonic case, at least in low dimension, the invertible phases seem to be described by group cohomology. Sorry, I seem to be running out of. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the simplest way to describe it's simplest to think about. Okay, right, so this you can definitely build the lattice model a quantum lattice model with commuting project Hamiltonians for these phases. It's slightly easier to think about it as a statistical mechanics system and then sort of transform it into a quantum Hamiltonian. They are sort of a fixed point statistical mechanics system, something for which their G flow is automatically trivial. So it's a statistical mechanics system defined on a triangulation of a manifold such that the answer is actually independent of the triangulation. So you can sort of refine or make or coarse grain freely without changing the answer, which sort of guarantees that there is no dynamics and makes the analysis simpler. And so basically the idea is to triangulate the manifold. You put group elements at each of the vertices. And then your partition function is going to be a sum over the group elements, maybe an average of the group elements, of a product for each simplex. Of a function of the group elements at the vertices of the simplex. Now, the requirement of triangulation invariant tells that essentially, so in order for this system to have symmetry G, you want this function to be invariant when you multiply all the group elements by some group element. You want this to be invariant under the left action of the group on the group elements simultaneously on all the vertices. And then you also want, in order to have triangulation invariant, you need to impose some condition that tells you that roughly if you have something like the Boltzmann weight for something like this is equal to the Boltzmann weight for something like this. And this gives you essentially a condition that this alpha is a group cocycle. Then you can also ask which redefinitions you can do on alpha which clearly do not change the answer. And this gives you some identification like this. And so roughly, these constructions are classified by elements in group in the group cohomology, valued in U1. And now, clearly, it's not obvious at all that different cohomology classes will always represent different phases in any dimension, or that all phases can be described like this. But in low enough dimension, you can show it by sort of computing some topological invariants of this system. For example, in 1+1 dimension, you get a Chukov cycle, which classifies projective representations, extensions of the group. And when you study the system on a segment with whatever boundary conditions you want, you always find projective representations of the group at each end associated to the cocycle. Or if you look in 2+1 dimensions, you can put this system, you can realize this system as a Turaev-Viro and associate it to as the sort of the graded center of a graded fusion G-graded fusion category, which is the pointed category mentioned earlier on. So in 2+1 dimension, you can build a fusion category with objects labeled by group elements, which fuse according to the group law, and say that the associator is alpha. And this will build a fusion category which is graded by the group G. And there is a general Torre-Viro technology to build 3D TFTs with group symmetry G out of a graded fusion category. And then so you can build the graded center of these categories and argue that they're different, and so these are different phases. Now, in the fermionic case, the first generalization of this construction came from the work of Gu and Wen. It's a very neat construction, which tries to generalize this setup by adding some extra fermionic degrees of freedom. And I don't know why, but they decided that it was natural to put the extra fermion degrees of freedoms on the faces of these simplices. So in the Goodwin construction, you take your triangulation, and to each face, for dimension one face, you might associate some Grassmann-Ott variables. So what you do is you take a function which is going to tell you for each face if to put or not those Grassmann variables. So this is a two-valued function. And if beta, let me call this face S, F. Okay, if beta F is 1, you don't do anything. If beta is minus 1, you put a pair of Grassmann variables at that face. Then you modify this construction in the following way. First of all, you associate each Grassmann variable to either one side or the other of your face. And then the Boltzmann weight for each simplex includes all the Grassmann variables associated to that simplex. So we have a product of the simplices of some alpha, and then all the thetas and theta bars which we have assigned to that simplex in some very specific order. Then you do a Grassmann integral. To get rid of the Grassmann variables. This, essentially, the Grassmann integral tells you to take this big product over simplices, reorganize the thetas and theta bars until you bring the theta for each phase near the corresponding theta bar, and then throw them away. So the result of this Grassmann integral is just to produce a sign, some minus, plus, minus 1, to add on top of the product of alphas. In order for this product over the simplices to make sense, we want this whole thing to be Grassmann even. So we're going to require that beta is a cocycle. Because the differential acting on beta tells me essentially the product of betas for all the faces of a simplex. So they asked, when is this partition function independent of triangulation? Because of the way that the Grassmann variables get reorganized when you retriangulate the manifold, you will end up with extra signs in your constraint on alpha. So the constraint on alpha became delta alpha equal to some plus minus one sign to be determined by some painful calculation. The calculation was very painful and rather messy. But the result turned out to be very beautiful as long as they allowed themselves to sort of introduce an extra fudge factor, which I will leave unspecified for now. So if you take the product of alphas, the Grassmann integral, and an extra sign which depends on beta in a certain way, then the condition for triangulation independence becomes very neat. And it can be written in a uniform way in all dimensions they checked. So they did this by hand in dimension 2, 3, and 4. And that has always turned out to be something called the Stenrod square of beta. So the Stenrod square is some beautiful mathematical operation called a stable cohomological operation. Personally, I've never seen it before reading this paper. And it took me quite a while to understand what it could possibly mean. But it just appears out of this messy calculation like a little gem, like a gem. And also, they found that when you look at the gauging at which choices of alphas and betas were equivalent, you similarly get that beta k can be transformed as a in Dobbs' way. So beta will live in some cohomology, group cohomology value in Z2. And alpha has to transform in an interesting way, which again involves the Sternhold square. So the way to think about it is that this sort of phases, or at least this sort of constructions, then you still need to figure out if this construction produces different phases. These constructions are labeled by a generalized cohomology theory, which is made out of a U1 valued cochain and a Z2 valued cochain, with a differential which is sort of triangular. So two obvious questions arise. First, why? Why? Where does this come from? Okay. What does it mean? Why should I ever think about Sternhold square operations? The second point is that this fudge factor actually is not risks breaking the symmetry of the problem. So they could argue that if you look at the local properties of the wave function, everything is fine. But if you try to put this model on a manifold, you seem to be getting in trouble. So one thing I did with Kapustin was to figure out that you can rewrite this in an interesting way, as sort of the product of beta of some collection of phases with the property that the boundary of this collection of phases is a representative, is it for the second Stephen-Witten class of the manifold. Which pretty much means that this construction makes sense only if this is exact. This is precisely the condition for a manifold to be spin. And then the answer depends on the choice of trivialization, which is the same as the choice of spin structure. So here we found the connection between the Gouin setup and spin TFTs. Now, once you understand this, it's not difficult to produce a fermionic version of Turay-Virov. That's what we did in the next paper with my student too. So there is a fermionic Turay-Virov theory. So the input of this theory is a fusion category, something called the pi fusion category. A fusion category, I say spherical fusion category, equipped with some fermion in the dream field center, which fuses with itself to the identity. So given this data, you can build a partition function on spin manifolds. And the trick is basically that usually in Turay-Virov at each phase, you attach the fusion space, the space of Holmes from So usually you attach Holm A tensor B to C to each phase. Now you're free to attach this or the Holm from A tensor B to C tensor pi. This choice is analogous to this beta. At the end, you're going to sum up over all the choices. There are extra signs which come out, but these extra signs are precisely the same as the ones you would get by manipulating the alphas in here. So those signs can be cured by adding in the same Grassmann integral with the same correction factor. Now, then we started looking at examples of these fusion categories with the fermion. Now, the first example should be something that comes from Gouin-Wen, the Gouin-Wen construction itself. And indeed, we found that if you take, you, so beta is a, in two plus one dimension is a Chukwu cycle, volume Z2. So beta encodes an extension of G by Z2. So we looked at the pointed category for G hat with some cocycle, alpha hat, and asked under which condition this admits a Fermi with this property. And we found that we could solve these equations if alpha hat was given in terms of an alpha, which satisfied delta alpha equal to SQ2 beta. And then we extended this construction. So there was a suggestion from various reasons that the Guo-Wang construction does not exhaust all fermionic SPT phases. And you should be able to add an extra layer involving Majorana objects somehow. And so we sort of built a class of fusion categories inspired by Ising, so a, sort of a semi-direct product of Ising and a group, and show that they still give you that they give you SPT invertible phases once you throw them in this construction. And those are classified by three elements, a gamma, a beta, and an alpha, where this tricocycle volume U1, sorry, a cochain volume in U1, this is a cochain volume in Z2, two cochain, and this is a one cochain volume in Z2. And then there is some different, then we didn't quite figure out what are the precise conditions between relating alpha, beta, and gamma. What we did was just to build some examples for various gammas and then combine them with Guwen. But later on, Kapustin and collaborators, and also Gu and Wang, perhaps some collaborator that I might be forgetting, show that, again, this can be understood as some generalized cohomology theory, where delta of beta is controlled by SQ2 gamma, delta of alpha is controlled by SQ2 beta, plus some complicated function of gamma, which they could not determine. Now, I don't know how much time I have left, probably my negative time, a large amount of negative time. So what I can say, I just want to draw a picture. So I want to explain why. Why do we keep encountering generalized cohomology theories? So we convinced ourselves that all these cohomology theories can be understood as something called cohomology volumes in a spectrum. For example, the Gu and Wang cohomology can be thought of as cohomology valued in the spectrum of supervector spaces, invertible supervector spaces. And this other structure can be understood as cohomology valued in the spectrum of invertible superalgebras. Now, what these words mean is the following. Consider your system with symmetry G. We said if you forget G, it becomes trivial. Now, I can do something. Before I forget about G, let me couple it to a G-flat connection. So add a connection on the links of the lattice. And let me keep this connection to be trivial almost everywhere except away from some domain walls. So I have my system, and then I have some walls across which objects get transformed by a group element G. These walls can meet. At intersections, then in higher dimension, of course, the intersections themselves can meet in lower codimension, and so on and so forth. Because this is a coupling to flat connection, the symmetry is non-anomalous. This is independent. The answer will be independent of gauge transformations, which pretty much means that I can move these domain walls around and reorganize them topologically however I want without changing the answer. Now do this, and forget about the symmetry. If you do that, away from the domain walls, you just have a trivial phase or some short-range entangled phase. At the domain walls, you'll find also some other lower-dimensional phases. So roughly, if you look at this picture, what are you going to see? You're going to see some phase nu zero in the bulk. This leaves in a space of gap phases, invertible gap phases in D plus one dimension. Then on the domain wall labeled by group G, you will find some invertible gap phase in D dimensions. At the junction between domain walls with group G and G prime, you find some other gap phase in D minus one dimension, et cetera, et cetera. This data satisfies some axioms clearly, because if I take two domain walls and I combine them, I get another domain wall. So for example, new one of G stacked with new one of G prime should give me new one of GG prime. Or if I look at a configuration like this, I might think that new two times new two equals some new two times new two. But actually, the identification with lower dimensional phases has a little bit of a subtlety, because these are domain walls inside a phase. They are not really theories on their own. But for invertible things, it's almost the same. There is something slightly non-canonical. The result is that when you look at the equation for nu 2, so this is delta nu 1 equal to 0, the equation for nu 2 will have some function of nu 1 correcting the right-hand side. And then the equation for nu 3 will have some corrections. So this shows that any SPT phase can be seen as a collection of cochains valued in lower dimensional invertible theories with no symmetry, satisfying some generalized cohomology condition. So we believe that this is the same as saying that this whole collection lives in the cohomology of G valued in invertible topological field theories. So the Gouin construction comes when you look at this and you say, okay, let me just limit myself to situations where everything is trivial except one-dimensional lines, which might be non-trivial. What are the invertible phases in zero plus one dimension? They're fermionic. I can have a one-dimensional vector space which is bosonic, or a one-dimensional vector space which is fermionic. That was this choice of putting or not a theta, a Grassmann variable on a phase. At the next level, I could say, wait, what if I allow my two-dimensional intersections to carry Majorana spin chains? Well, that will give me a three-level thing, which presumably is this. But in general dimension, I will have to include all possible invertible phases with no symmetry. Now, in a mathematical setup, I think this is essentially the proposal of Dan Fried and others, of taking an SPT phases as cohomology valued in a spectrum, what they call the Anderson dual of the sphere spectrum, which is somehow all possible conceivable invertible topological field theories that one can have. I do not know if all of those can be realized on a lattice, though. So the question I have is, what is the correct spectrum to put here to classify SPT phases?
Before people go off. So there's a change to the schedule. On Tuesday, Bianca's talk, Beatrice, the last talk on Tuesday, is swapped with Dominic's talk on Friday. So the second talk, Bianca will speak on Friday at 11, and Dominic will speak on Tuesday at 4:30. And the schedule on the website has been updated. So you can always refer to that in case of any changes. Probably not. So yeah, question for Davide. Let's do a 5-minute question.
What do you mean by invertible
Well, whatever is your class of topological theories, yeah, the ones that are invertible. So it's a spectrum of invertible theories with invertible domain walls between invertible theories and invertible junctions of domain of invertible domain walls of invertible theories. So this is a big package which contains all of this information about invertible objects. With no symmetry whatsoever. Like in low enough dimension, this package contains presumably the Majorana spin chain and the possible lines, invertible lines on the Majorana spin chain, invertible junctions of several Majorana spin chains. And somehow the combinatorics of how you deform and topological manipulate these junctions should be translated into the relations between alphas, betas, and gammas. I still don't know why, in general, this is something that you should be able to integrate on a spin manifold. Or on which manifolds. But intuitively, I would expect that, for example, if I'm talking about my spin chains, if you give me any d-dimensional manifold and you draw a two-dimensional network inside of it of Majorana spin chains, I should be able to just compute. I still don't understand the relationship between this and the statements of spin manifolds versus normal manifolds.
Mm-hmm. Does your partition function kind of look similar to like BRSC or like popping BBC forms, you know, ghost fields? Mm-hmm. IP ghost
fields,
is there a connection there, or is it just notation?
No, I think it's mostly notation, I think. But it's true that this had the appearance of, you know, from an energy physics point of view, these look like bosonic ghosts. Like, they are not, they're definitely not spinners.
Yeah.
Other questions? I have a matter question. So you mentioned in the beginning that one of your dreams is to employ these mathematical theorems about logical categories, let's say.
Yes.
To prove something in physics.
Yes.
So my question is, is it assuming some specific model, or is the point to show that the model actually works? Or, I mean, so how do you, what is meant by this?
For example, suppose that I'm limiting myself to models which are commuting conjectural Hamiltonians, and which have topological effect description. Okay, commuting conjectural Hamiltonian models in 2+1 dimensions. Can I find a target category for topological, extended topological field theories which precisely capture these models? So different objects in the category are just different models, different phases for these models. I think it's probably possible.
In this like dream scenario, like how would you try and formalize the criterion that these lattice models have a nice continuum limit, like they have some effective field theory?
That's the thickest part, I agree. I would like not. So In the specific type of models I'm trying to look at the moment, I'm trying to look at models with the following property. They must admit a topological boundary condition, as a pair of topological boundary conditions, gap boundary conditions, with the property that if I cut the system with these boundary conditions, I can heal it back to the, so that I can condense this product of boundary conditions back to the identity boundary condition. Now, in order to make statements like that, I need to have at least some degree of topological invariance. I need to be able, for example, if I want to talk about collision of interfaces, for example, I would have to be able to be in a system where moving an interface parallel to itself does not change things like the space of states. So I don't think you really need to impose topological invariance, but a certain... Yeah, I don't know exactly. You know, I don't know exactly what is the set of axioms that excludes, say, the qubit code. But I think it should be possible to find a good class where to work.
I have a old question. I'm wondering, because you have these theories that are based on some sort of homology, and also because the nodes. Black-hand wisdom theory basically only gives you an invariance of the most big class of the manifolds. Do you expect that these things give you more information about is there some sort of
well-known subset, something about the entropy of the manifold, that's really all that you're looking at, or is it more powerful?
I honestly don't know. I think all of this, well, I'm not the right person to ask, but this sort of classification should be similar to classifications based on cobordisms. So I think that means that they only see the homotopy, but I'm not sure.